Hello and welcome to the New Schools Podcast. Thanks to a global pandemic, I think we've all experienced some form of an online classroom scenario. There are endless options out there, but OutSchool.com is leading the pack as the largest marketplace of live online classes for kids K through 12. As of this recording in January 2021, their website is touting 100,000 plus video chat classes in 200 countries with 500,000 learners, as well as $45 million in teacher earnings. And OutSchool has all types of courses: coding, engineering, design, cooking, and drawing, along with traditional core classes like algebra and world history. Today, you'll get to look inside the mind of the founder and CEO of OutSchool, Amir Nathu. Amir previously developed software for Square, the very successful mobile payment company. Before that, he was the CEO and co-founder of Trigger.io, providing simpler tools for developers of mobile apps. And before that, he was a developer and consultant for IBM. Amir holds a master's in electrical and information sciences from the University of Cambridge, and he has a two-year-old son. Today, you'll learn about OutSchool's best-selling courses and the teaching staff community, which you can join. OutSchool does not require formal teaching credentials and reports that teachers earn an average of $50 per hour taught. In this episode, Amir also shares tips for parents in choosing online classes, some thoughts on screen time in general, and what we can do to re-engineer schools for the 21st century. I hope you enjoy the show. Now here's your host, Shannon Falkenstein and Amir Nathu.
Hello, Amir Nathu, and welcome to the New Schools Podcast. We're so happy to have you here today.
I'm excited to be here talking to you. Thank you.
Wonderful. So for those in the audience who aren't familiar with OutSchool, could you just give us your elevator pitch?
Yes, absolutely. So OutSchool is a marketplace of live online classes for kids. So these are classes that meet in small groups over video chat. Typically 3 to 8 students and a teacher will meet with all the participants joining from all over the country or all over the world to learn a topic that they're interested in. And because it's a marketplace, teachers get really creative and not only teach standard subjects, but things like learn architecture through Minecraft, learn Spanish by singing Taylor Swift songs in Spanish, Fortnite discussion group, learn about cat anatomy from a vet, all kinds of interest-based topics. And so, you know, we've been very fortunate to help a lot of families who have moved to online learning during this time.
Wow, that sounds amazing. So creative. Really great. So of all the people that I have interviewed on the New Schools Podcast, most of them started their alternative or innovative education journeys from the education side. But it seems that you came to OutSchool from more of the technology and engineering disciplines. What motivated you to start OutSchool?
Well, that's right. You know, I've come from technology and I've been in tech my whole career. But, you know, my connection with education, aside from my own learning, was through my parents, both of whom were teachers in math and physics. And, you know, so I've been thinking about applying technology in education for a lot of my career and finally got to do so with OutSchool. The other motivating factors were, you know, my own experience with education and alternative education. I had a very standard education growing up in the UK, which was absolutely fantastic and gave me a great base. And I ended up studying engineering at Cambridge. But some of the most impactful learning experiences for me happened outside of school. And so when I was thinking about, you know, my own son's education and what the future held, I realized that there was an opportunity to create more learning opportunities outside of regular school. And, you know, that's where the name OutSchool came from. And, you know, the idea is to say, well, what are all the places where we can supplement local schools and fill in the gaps with subjects that aren't covered, or with learning styles that aren't so well served, or just if a kid just needs a different set of teachers and peers in order to really get something. And so, all of those were motivating factors for OutSchool.
Fantastic. Give us an example of one of your experiences of learning that was very impactful but happened outside of regular school.
I'll give a couple. One I talk about a lot because it just was so impactful for my career was my parents buying me a computer when I was age five, a BBC Micro, and it was a toy. It was something to play computer games on, and it was new, this computer thing. And my dad was kind of a tinkerer, being a physicist. So, he liked the gadgets, and so he got that for me. And, back in those days, to play games, you had to kind of be on the command line, and it came with a manual teaching how to program. And my parents spotted that I was starting to teach myself how to program, and I was really getting into it. And so they found me resources outside of school in order to pursue that interest, and found me a retired economics professor who was starting to teach computer science. So I actually got a qualification in computer science at a very young age, I think age 12. That experience happened completely outside of school, and yet I've built an entire career on it. And of course, my parents at the time didn't expect that that was how it was going to turn out, but it reflected their approach of helping me pursue interests, many of which were just fun, but some of which turned out to be really, really impactful and important. And that has led me to have a strong belief in the value of helping kids pursue interests, both for their motivation and empowerment, which, above all else, I think will fuel academic success. But secondly, you just never know that what something is seems like a toy today will become incredibly important economically in the future.
Yes, I very much relate to that. I also relate to so many people that I've talked to in the sort of alternative or innovative education space have a history of having someone in their life who was a tinkerer, because it really helped them learn how to solve problems and to develop that everyday sense of mechanics, how do things fit together, deciding to solve a problem or fix something. And I just, wow, that's really interesting that you said that. Tell us about you. So you have this love for computers and a history with computers. How will you handle screens and technology, do you think, with your own child?
It's a challenge in some ways, because I, like I'm sure many parents people listening, you have a concern that you want a balanced, rounded experience for your child. And there's always this fear about, too much screen time. And I have a two-year-old, 2 years and 1 month old at home. He is already on my phone. He managed to send his first text message the other day to one of our investors. I thought he was just looking through photos, which he's also very adept at, looking through his own baby photos. And he started to get familiar with some apps, and he lets out this cackle of glee when he's just sitting there with a phone screen, wondering which icon to click and hovering his finger over each one. So, he's clearly fascinated by screen time at a young age. And at the same time, I feel that right now he is getting a balanced experience, and he's also fascinated by many other things. And I think, there's this difficulty that parents face, and that we know how addictive these technologies can be because we suffer from it ourselves. And it's really no wonder that my son is fascinated by the phone, because, for all my own discipline, he sees me on it. He sees that I work on my computer all day. And he correctly identifies that these things that his dad is playing with must be incredibly powerful tools of society. So, while I share a concern with, I'm sure, many parents, I also accept that he's right and he's perceptive. And I trust that he has recognized this, and that's driving his fascination to play. And I see it as my role to not necessarily restrict that, but instead try and feed his fascination in other things as well, and to make sure through modeling of my own behavior and crafting his environments, that as well as, sometimes going for my phone and grabbing it off me and starting to play with it, that he also gets fascinated by, you know, his ball to play in the backyard and his physical toys and interacting verbally and socially with, you know, myself and the rest of his family. So, you know, that's how I approach it, but I recognize it's challenging and, you know, all kids are different. So I think we should resist the idea of overgeneralization, that we can just come up with a recipe and that this is going to, you know, work for all kids. You know, I also need to talk about my personal experience of this, which makes it hard for me to necessarily police my son in an overly rigorous way, because, you know, there were no concerns about screen time when it came to computers when I was young. You know, there was concern about screen time in terms of television, but I was given free rein and I was obsessed. I was obsessed with computer games. I was obsessed with programming. I played flight simulators. I played strategy games. And none of it seemed valuable at the time, but a lot of it has been valuable in my career, and not just in the career I've chosen in tech. I almost became a plane pilot, a fighter pilot in the Royal Air Force. I actually flew planes and was trained by them in college. That it was a fun activity. You know, they paid you a little bit of a stipend, and I seriously explored it for a couple of years. And in order to pass, and I even went to the test where you actually go and get selected to see whether you could become a military pilot. And lo and behold, in the test, a lot of it was playing these games. Like, could you hold a cursor steady on the stream with all this turbulence? What happens if you flip the controls from left to right? And could you memorize these long digits of coordinates? Those are the kind of tests they did. And I absolutely aced this. When I was doing it, I was thinking, A, this is fun. And B, I've spent many hours in my teenage years like preparing for this unintentionally. And so, you know, it's hard for me because I've gained so much by unlimited, unpoliced screen time in an era where it wasn't a concern. Now, I know that's not quite the same today, because today, unfortunately, there's a lot of business built up around this, which is designing games and applications to be a little bit more problematic in the way that they're addicting. So that means we have to take steps. But I do think, you know, some of the commentary we see publicly about this isn't very well balanced. And it takes the agency away from kids and parents, whereas I have a strong belief that we can design our interactions with our kids and our families' lives to handle the new challenges.
Thank you very much for your comments. I think, how do I say it? I don't know. I kept thinking of Ender's Game when you were talking about video games being sort of a training ground for high level skills that people will need in the future. And that children who are drawn to doing those kind of things, it could be very well that they're just going through a deep process of learning. And I also really like your message of balance, because even if they are very interested in that, of course, they still need to take care of their bodies. And like you said, their interests, socialization and things like that. So that is, I like your message of balance. And also of following the child, which is a maxim that I talk about practically every day, created by Maria Montessori. And it sounds like that's also very much your parents' philosophy and your own parenting philosophy and out-school's philosophy, because it allows children to decide what their interests are. And then it gives, you have this whole marketplace where they can sign up for the courses that they're interested in. But what I understand from what you're saying, out-school, your goal is not to replace regular school, but to supplement it. Is that true?
Yes, that's right. And to, you know, offer something different that we think is missing from the regular education system, which is, you know, some of what you described, the ability for kids to be able to explore a much wider range of topics than to be taught in a much wider range of ways, and to do that in a social way where it's interacting with others and in a way that, you know, empowers them and enables self-direction. And we think the two together can be incredibly powerful, because, you know, I think it's really important that people have a common set of knowledge and that we have some mechanism for making sure that, you know, people aren't left behind and that we're able to, you know, track progress. And, you know, I think those are all the areas where the traditional education system is designed for, the idea of a central common curriculum and this common base. I think that's valuable. At the same time, I don't think it's enough in order to truly prepare kids to have a happy and kind of economically fulfilled career, because you know, it seems impossible that a fixed curriculum and local schooling can meet all of every kid's needs. I think it can meet some of most kids' needs, and then what about the rest? And it's that what about the rest piece that OutSchool is designed to fill in. So, and I think it's been an area that's been underexplored historically, just because, you know, there hasn't really been the options or the technology there. There's an element that technology unlocks new possibilities here, in that before video chat got to a certain level of sophistication, really your only choice was your local schooling or whatever extracurricular options were available locally, which radically limited your options, particularly outside of urban areas. Whereas the live video format enables you to access far more classes and teachers, topics, modes of interaction than could possibly be available locally, while also retaining most of the kind of human to human interactive component that makes learning so engaging when, you know, it involves people. And so I think there's been a bit of an unlock there, which enables OutSchool to exist and enables us to offer more options when it comes to self-directed learning.
I hear you about the common knowledge that we all need. Do you believe that school needs to be as many hours a day and as many years of someone's life in order to accomplish that? Or to put it another way, if you could sort of re-engineer school for the 21st century, what would that look like?
So the answer is no. I don't think school needs to be as many hours in the day and structured as it is. You know, when I think about designing school, I think about designing school for my own kid. And what do I want? And, I've had this idea for a while that I would like 2 days of traditional academic subjects taught in a group format with a teacher. I would like 2 days of project-based learning, which is more self-directed, but some support and structure. And, at least 1 day a week of kind of extreme unschooling, totally self-directed with, me following around as a facilitator, essentially, and being pulled on for help. And I could see, you know, to me, that would be my starting point. And then I would seek to adjust the parameters of that setup with my child's direction, especially as they grew older, I'd expect them to take control of that divide. But what I like about that mix is it would give my child a balanced perspective of the different types of ways that they might choose to learn, so that when they felt like they wanted to exercise their agency, they can make an informed decision between them. And I would feel like I'm doing my job in a sense, presenting a menu of options that pull from different philosophies without being overly prescriptive or out of balance. I think, you know, only sending my child to a local school, even, you know, a Montessori inspired one that had many of the principles of self-directed learning, wouldn't quite open up the full range of possibilities. So that's how I think about it.
Wow. Oh, shameless plug here, but it sounds a lot like Acton Academy, to be honest. So you could check into that if you want.
Interesting.
Yes, it is very much. It's like self-directed learning and then project-based learning and ultimately so that children follow their own passions and then go on to their next great adventure, be that university or working or a gap year or investing in something. So it's it sounds very similar to what you're saying. And so many people, not just Acton, but so many of the people that I interview on the New Schools podcast sort of have also arrived at that, a similar structure that you are describing there, which I think is fascinating and very validating to each one of us, right? Because we're all kind of arriving at the same conclusion, and it most of the people who've gotten there have done that by following children and what their own natural instincts are. So I find that to be extremely validating and hopeful for the future. How has the COVID pandemic impacted OutSchool? I imagine it's been actually a boon for you.
You know, the COVID pandemic has had a dramatic impact on OutSchool. You know, at the start of the pandemic, we had had 80,000 kids attend classes, and that was from when we first launched our first version of our product in 2017 through to March of 2020. We're now at over 600,000 kids having attended OutSchool classes. Wow. And so, you know, the majority of those have joined us since March. So it's been absolutely dramatic, and we've had to scramble, especially in the early days of COVID during March, to just bring on more teachers, more staff in order to be able to handle it. And, you know, I'm very grateful that we've been able to help so many families, because what's driving that growth is families realizing that they need to take matters into their own hands if they want to keep their kids engaged with learning, because often the normal schooling choice hasn't been able to provide the same level of service, a full day's curriculum. Well, they just haven't been experienced in offering engaging online classes. So even if they are offering something, it's just not working for the kids. So many, many families have turned to us. And, you know, as well, in addition to the number of families, the nature of the families coming to us and how they're discovering us and what their background is has changed as well. You know, in the early days of OutSchool, many families were coming from the secular homeschooling community and the alternative education community. You know, the typical early adopters of new educational tools. And we intentionally, you know, geared ourselves up to serve them, but always with this idea that we were trying to take the ideas of this community and take it mainstream and show this different types of learning to a far wider group of parents. And we were well on the way to doing that. So by the start of 2020, when we looked at the new parents coming to OutSchool, about half of them were coming from the homeschooling communities or alternative education. Half were coming with kids in school wanting to supplements their education with interest-based topics. Now, the percentage is far, far higher of families who are coming to us who have kids in some form of schooling or would have them in some form of schooling if it weren't for COVID. And what's really interesting is there's a couple of things about this shift which I believe will last beyond the current crisis. One of those is that everyone who comes to OutSchool now understands what live online is. People really get, in a way that they didn't before, oh, there's a type of online learning which isn't just pressing play on a video. It's actually interacting with people over video chat. Some people have had a good experience with that. Many have had not so good experiences with that. But everyone knows what it is. And that's gonna remain. And so it's an option for parents going forward in a way that it wasn't, you know, it wouldn't necessarily be on their minds before. And then secondly, because the kind of default of education has been so challenged and disrupted, we're seeing families being much more intentional about their education choices and being slower to think about returning to the default. And so when we survey them about their educational choices going forward, many are planning not to do the same thing that they were before. Now, some are switching schools, some are thinking about micro schools or continuing with their learning pods, which, you know, I used to call those homeschool co-ops, but, you know, the verbiage has changed, but it's essentially that. You know, various forms of self-directed learning or kind of eclectic, patched together types of learning. And, you know, there's many challenges in that logistically for families and society, but I'm really inspired by the change because I think it can drive wider systemic change in education. And one challenge was always this inertia of existing expectations and the existing system. Whereas now when parents are faced with, you know, intentionally making choices and actually also seeing really upfront, up close what their schools are able to offer versus the alternatives, I think, we can see some, we have the opportunity to see some widespread positive change. I don't want to, be Pollyanna-ish about this, but there are also serious societal challenges associated with it. Namely, you know, what's going to happen to kids whose parents can't afford alternative options that are offered privately? How is the public school going to adapt given budgetary constraints, local politics, and new restrictions? So, you know, kids are being, left behind and are learning at so many different paces in COVID. Like, even after COVID's over, how are we going to deal with this difference in pace that kids have been learning at during this time, depending on how much resources they've had access to? I think it's going to be very, very difficult. I do think there's some silver linings in there.
Thank you. So students now have so many resources for self-directed learning, mainly online, but online, as we talked about, cannot deliver the same social, hands-on, or experiential learning that in real-life communities can. What tips do you have right now, both for children and families that are inside because of COVID, and also in the future to get those needs met? Like, what would you counsel someone, or what will you do personally?
There's this word, hybrid. Mm-hmm. And I would say it again and again and again, you know, hybrid, combine different modes of learning in order to achieve good balance. There are some options which are only available online or are very good to be done online. There are other things that are more challenging to do online, you know, any kind of, you know, hands-on project involving, you know, materials and or exercise and movements, you know, there are online versions of that. Actually, you can do exercise in a group online, but you know, you don't want to be sat in front of a computer all day. So it's really important to go for balance. And I also think of hybrid in terms of self-directed versus more structured. You can think about balancing those two aspects as well as the mode of online, offline. And I really think that's the future of education, is heading towards that balance. And, you know, unfortunately now, I think a lot of families will feel that they are overbalanced to the online side. So, you know, I expect there to be a little bit of rebalancing when we can all hopefully get out into the open again and actually get back to some in-person learning in groups. But I think it'll be surprising how quickly people then go, oh, actually, I've got used to this new way of things. And not just in learning, in work, you know, as a company, OutSchool has moved to be fully remote permanently because of COVID, because we found that we were able to operate remotely. And there were some upsides, the lack of commutes, the ability to bring people into the company from lots of different locations. A lot of logistical challenges that we might have feared of making that switch turned out not to be so bad. And so I think people will be making lifestyle shifts which will actually help them pursue alternative education options in a way that might be difficult with the workplace being as it was.
That's a great point. Tell us more about your staff community. Is this sort of like gig work for teachers? And if so, is this again supplemental for teachers, or should this be thought of as their main job? And if so, how do you deal with benefits and things like that? Is that something that you all are able to offer or not? And as you're hiring more and more teachers to go from 80,000 to 600,000 learners, how are you assuring quality of your instructors?
Yeah, great question. So we have over 10,000 teachers now teaching throughout school, which is incredible. That's up for 1,000 at the start of the pandemic. And, you know, there's, you know, teachers are free to teach the classes that they want to teach. So they create the curriculum, they set the price of their class, and they set their hours. And we then vet the classes and the teachers. So there's an application process and a vetting process to ensure a base level of quality, but we don't restrict the creativity of teachers. We don't say you must teach, you know, this curriculum. We say propose a class, and assuming it meets our bar for quality and is objective, secular, and age appropriate, we'll publish it. And then it'll be successful insofar as it meets parents and learner interests. There's a degree to which you can think of this as being gig economy in the sense that teachers are independent contractors. They, you know, aren't having a, it's not like a salaried position. They don't have a guaranteed income. Instead, they're offering their services through the marketplace. The thing is, there's a few distinctions to typical gig economy companies. One is that the teachers set their own prices for the class. Another is they actually create their own curriculum. So they're not only selling their time, they're also selling their intellectual property as part of the class. And there's a lot more upside for teachers than typical gig economy companies in that, you know, they can have multiple enrollments in the class. So they can earn relatively high dollars per hour insofar as their class is successful. And if they become very successful, they can become organizations on our platform and actually employ other teachers. And we have some very, very successful organizations of teachers which band together to teach classes. So there's a lot more upside. So there's a new term that's being talked about to distinguish platforms like ours from others where it's almost like treating people as a commodity, which, you know, teachers aren't, they're creative professionals. And this word is being talked about creator platforms, where it's not just about people kind of selling undifferentiated time in order to provide a base level of earnings, but actually creating unique assets that they then combine with their time, and they can distinguish themselves and differentiate themselves and build a real business. And you know, that's how I see OutSchool for teachers. And so we have teachers who use OutSchool as kind of a part-time income to supplement their main job. We have teachers that have become incredibly successful on OutSchool to the point of, you know, earning hundreds of thousands of dollars this year and, you know, being at the top end of professional earnings. And, you know, I'm really proud and excited about how much we've been able to pay out to teachers and the economic opportunities we've created, particularly this year when, you know, so many other economic opportunities are being curtailed because of COVID and the economy.
Wow. Well, I am so pleased to hear that. And I think that our audience will be too, that you're actually allowing teachers to become much more entrepreneurial and that, and really there's no ceiling on how much they could make or how creative they could be on your platform. You're great. Enabling them. That's incredible. Wow. Great job. That's like just all sunshine. That's really good.
Well, thank you. But, you know, great job to the teachers, but, you know, we can't predict necessarily which classes are going to be successful, and teachers will propose a class which they're excited about. And you know, we'll publish it and market it to our audience and suddenly it just takes off. And so it's really, the marketplace is really driven by their inspiration and you know, the teacher's creativity and ability to link their creativity to inspiring learners, which is what we're all trying to do.
And do teachers have a way of marketing their own classes? Like, I imagine with so many classes, like you can't market all of those equally. So how do teachers have input into that, or can they invest in marketing their own course, or how does that work?
Well, we market OutSchool as a whole, mm-hmm. and then you know, parents might come in because they see one class, but then they buy multiple more classes, and usually not from necessarily the same teacher they came in on. So, you know, the thing about the marketplace that makes it mutually supportive for teachers is, you know, if a teacher comes on board and creates a brand new creative class that no one's ever offered before and draws in some parents, that actually benefits all the other teachers on the platform who then have a shot at you know, inspiring those parents. So most of the enrollments in OutSchool are coming from parents buying again, and from parents coming in through the emails we send, and also just searching on our site for classes that meet their needs. In addition, you know, some teachers do promote their own classes and are able to drive some enrollments that way, particularly if, for example, they have large social media followings or an existing community. So that is a way that some teachers get started. That said, most teachers come to OutSchool without necessarily having that, but with having the curriculum and skills. And you know, we see it as part of our role to be driving demand to their classes. So yeah, if teachers are considering teaching OutSchool, they don't necessarily need to be thinking about that. They can just focus on the curriculum, focus on creating great classes and experimenting and letting us drive that demand.
Wow, fantastic. So what is your top number one selling class on OutSchool?
You know, I actually can't tell you that because, you know, I would say, well, let's go to our websites and we have a most popular ranking on our listings.
Okay.
Let's go look at the most popular class. So you can go do that. The thing is that class will keep changing because they fill up. And so the most popular class right now is probably sold out.
Okay.
But the good news is that, you know, we don't like to emphasize, you know, the most popular class or the most, or one most popular teacher. Because the reality is what's a great class for one kid is not necessarily the best class for another kid. And so what the most important thing is to use the site to find the perfect class for your kid and find the right group. So, you know, we have 120,000 classes on OutSchool, and I won't want to pick any one that's my favorite, but I shared a few of ones that have recently caught my eye. Another one is Critical Thinking Through Dungeons and Dragons.
I saw that the other day on my Instagram.
Yeah, so it's a very, very popular class. And again, one that, you know, we would never have guessed would be such a popular class. And we've got teachers who have gone full-time teaching on OutSchool because, you know, that class has become so popular. So,
wow.
I love that story.
What tips do you have for parents in choosing online classes?
So my number one tip is involve your child.
Of course.
So either literally sit down with them on an iPad and, you know, browse through and see what catches their eye. Or maybe create a short list and save a few classes to go through with your child later and let them pick the one that they want to take. So that'd be the number one thing. You know, the second thing is that it's really important that your child kind of gels and connects with the teacher and their style. So if it's possible, you know, many of our classes have a video where the teacher will kind of present a little intro, and you're using those to detect whether it's going to be a good fit with your kid is really important. And also, you know, messaging the teacher in advance and, you know, checking in on any questions you have and expectations is really important to finding a good match.
Great. And so I imagine pricing is different for each class depending on what the teacher charges, how many students there are. But could you give us kind of a range?
Yeah. So typically we see teachers charging between $10 and $15 per hour. You know, sometimes it's a lot less, you know, $5 and below for some larger classes, and it can go higher for some specialist classes, but generally that's the range. And so if it's a one-time class, you'll just be paying that, you know, $10 to $15. If it's a repeating class, it might be that amount per week. Or if you buy a semester class, it might be a few hundred dollars for the whole semester.
Okay, great. I had the pleasure of interviewing Kelly Davis from Galileo a few weeks ago. How would you compare and contrast OutSchool with Galileo?
And is this the in-person camps? I'm not sure I'm fully familiar
with
Galileo.
Oh, I'm so sorry. No. So Galileo is an online school, and it's similar to OutSchool in that it's online. But and then they have things called nano degrees. So children can enroll in nano degrees that are kind of maybe 6-week projects. But they can also take math and reading and writing and science. And they can pay a yearly tuition, which I think is around $2,000 for the year or $300 a month. And then they kind of have unlimited Galileo, and there are different teachers. Like I saw one of the classes was a National Geographic photographer that was teaching how to tell stories through photography, which is something I think you could see in OutSchool as well. So I think they don't, I mean, I guess I'm answering the question for you, but they don't have nearly as many classes or as many students, but it's a similar, it's more like an online school, I think, that replaces regular school.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and I am familiar with that model. And there's a few that have become, you know, very successful recently as well. And, you know, the key distinguishing feature is, you know, the nature of our marketplace being so diverse in terms of the number of classes and the amount of content. And also the you know, pay-as-you-go nature. You can commit as little or as much as you like, anything from a one-time class to fill a very specific need or time slot all the way through to a semester-long course. So it's that flexibility that we offer, as in, you know, in contrast to a regular school, whether it's in person or online, which offers a smaller range of subjects, teachers, smaller community, but maybe more continuity. So I think they fulfill, you know, different needs, and we're very, very focused on enabling interest-based self-directed learning through a huge variety of topics.
Great. Well, thank you so much. My final question always is to invite you to come up with a metaphor comparing what you're doing out school with conventional schooling.
Great question. It's one I've thought about actually before, and I even wrote a little bit about this. So this one I'm really, really glad to share. I think of an analogy to the education system being the transportation system. And I think of regular school and the typical classes and curriculum as being like the journeys from large train hubs. So, you know, if you're starting at a very particular point, you go on a very standard path where you go in a straight line from A to B, and the educational journey is taking you from that major hub to the other major hub. Which is great for, you know, as an efficient transportation mechanism. The challenge is that you, as a person using the system, you're not all starting from the same place. You're starting from your own home, and you somehow need to get to that hub, train station, or airport. You could use planes as another analogy. And you also have a trouble at the other side. You know, once you arrive at your destination, you know, you might have different life and career goals. You need a little bit extra or a little bit different. And so, you know, you take a cab, or you drive, or you use a whole variety of different transportation options in order to get to the train hub or get to the airport. And, you know, that's how I see OutSchool fitting in. You know, you have schools that are designed to take kids down these very standard, well-trodden paths. And you have OutSchool, which is designed to fill in all the rest and provide kind of the last mile of education, is sometimes how I describe it.
Okay, so this is so interesting, because I was speaking to, I think it was Blake Bowles. Are you familiar with Blake? He's a...
Yeah, I've read of some of his writing.
Yeah, he's wonderful. His latest book is Why Are You Still Sending Your Kids to School? And it's a real question. He's not being snarky. I think that he also used the train tracks as a metaphor when I asked him.
Oh, but, interesting.
Yeah, but I think he was referring, I believe, I could be remembering incorrectly, but that the tracks were fixed, you know, in the ground. So you couldn't decide where you were going. You had to go where the train was going. So then he compared self-directed learning to be like, well, you're getting in your own car and driving. And, but you, I see, returning to your theme of balance, are valuing still where the train is going, that those tracks are there for a very good reason, and that the train needs to go to that place, but that getting to the train station and getting home from the train station require more self-directed and customizable ways of traveling or ways of learning, things to learn, right? So am I getting it right?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's a little bit of, I mean, I think that this is how the transportation system analogy really does fit, right? Because you could go from San Francisco to New York by car, or you can go to a major airport or a train hub and take the standard route. Or if you wanted to, you know, go on a bit of an explore and, you know, wind a very particular path, then you can use the car. And, you know, I might liken that to a true homeschooling or a true, you know, unschooling adventure, versus a hybrid approach where you do a bit by car, then you take a a standard path for one section of it, and then you carry on doing your own thing. And I think all of those can coexist and ultimately will coexist. I don't think it's a case that, you know, one education system is going to fit everyone. And so, you know, from my perspective without school, I would love to see the whole education system shift more towards self-directed learning. But my expectation is that it's going to be a wide variety of different philosophies and approaches. And I think that's great.
Yeah, I agree. Wow. Thank you so much. This has been a really incredible conversation. And I think everyone in the audience has learned so much about OutSchool and this model of supplementing education with so many amazing courses. I think you're providing a very valuable service for the world and its children. So great job. Thank you. And I can tell that it's being very successful for you. So that's awesome.
Yeah, thank you so much. Yeah, it's been a pleasure to talk and discuss all these fantastic topics. So thank you.
Yes, you're welcome. And I want to thank the audience for stopping by and listening to Amir Nathu and all about OutSchool. Thank you so much.
Thanks. Take care.
Thanks for listening to the New Schools Podcast. Tell a friend. Previous episodes and show notes, including any books or websites our guests recommend, can be found at thenewschools.com. If you're a parent who is looking for a new school for your family, send us a message. We would love to help. We can answer questions, share the resources we have, and help you get in touch with people in your area who are on the same path, determined to provide their kids with the best education. It's wildly important work. Thank you for doing it, and we'll see you next time.